All right, thank you so much, Regis. As always, thank you. And yes, we're turning this mic over to you, Regina. I did want to say that people may have gotten in the mail that I'm going to be a guest teacher tonight at 8 o'clock. I am not. Karen Ann from Chicago will be our guest teacher at 8 o'clock, and her topic is What is Real? Right now, Regina Dornakis, the mic is all yours. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Regis sounded like he was on a roll, so I thought I was going to get to rest a little bit, which I would be totally cool with. I've had a fairly busy 3 weeks. The first week we had Pamela Silberman and then Sylvain here as guests, and then we had the conference, and then we had the silent retreat, which wasn't really busy, but, you know, it was outside of just the routine. It was different. And then we had Ruby and Rose Marie as guests. Rose Marie left on Friday. And then yesterday, Jasmine wanted to go to the Denver Zoo, so we drove to Denver to the zoo. And then today I had church and a board meeting at the Center for Inner Peace and grocery buying. And, you know, Regis, if you had just gone right on talking, I would have just sat back and put my feet up and listened. And thank God for the little bit of a break. That would have been fine with me. You could have. I know, you were on a roll, I could tell. So happy Sunday, everyone. I am here to share from the seven steps to awakening, beginning with number 372. A lot of people in the room. I'm wondering if that's because it's getting dark earlier that people are starting to show up again, or is it because of Sandy that people can't go outside anyway if you're in the East? Let me give you a link to number 372 in my journal. There's the link to number 372 in the journal. And for those of you who don't know the seven steps, I'll be reading from the seven steps to awakening, and then we'll go and look at the journal entry, which is what I wrote after contemplating the quote that's in the seven steps to awakening. If you're listening in on the radio, you can go to this website to join us. It's RDA7. That is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to that website, up on the menu bar, you'll just click on step 2, because we were on step 2 of the 7 steps to awakening. And then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your own way to number 372. And we are going to begin at number 372. All right. So I always like to start with, sometimes I start with music, but I always also like to start with a bit of silence. And so I'm going to go right into the silence tonight. So if y'all would join me, I would appreciate it. Silence. Amen. All right. So as I mentioned, we're going to begin with number 372. First, I will read number 372 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. And right now, The Seven Steps to Awakening is quoting the Supreme Yoga. And the Supreme Yoga is another book. So this is the quote from the Supreme Yoga. Each individual sees only those objects which are rooted in his own mind. When the ideas in the mind do not bear fruits, there is a change in the mind. There follows a succession of births to suit these psychological changes. It is this psychological connection that creates the conviction in the reality of birth and death, and in the reality of body. When this conviction is given up, there is a cessation of embodiment. So one thing that's really interesting about this quote, it's a fairly long quote, but what the quote is pointing out is that we have a set of beliefs, and that we experience the world through that filter or that set of beliefs, and so we see what we believe in the world. And that sometimes what happens is, we come to see that maybe our beliefs aren't in our best interest, for lack of better words, they aren't serving me. My beliefs are not serving me. And sometimes what we do when we see that our beliefs are not serving us is that we then trade those beliefs in for new beliefs. And in fact, this is what has happened for many of us, if not most of us or even all of us on the spiritual path. As we may have had a set of beliefs at one point in our life. We saw that those beliefs were not serving us. And so we have laid down those beliefs. We've gotten on what we call the spiritual path. And without realizing it, typically, we've taken on new beliefs as a part of the spiritual path. We have thoughts that sound true, and in fact, if they were experienced, if they were known, they would be representative of truth. Like the world is not real. I am not the person. I am the self. But for most of us, those lines are actually just new beliefs. They're not a direct experience. And so what the Supreme Yoga is saying is that, this change in mind or this change in beliefs does not actually awaken. It just leads to additional births and deaths. And in fact, it reminds me of N.T.I. Luke. N.T.I. Luke says that the spiritual path is the highest of all paths in the world. But then the Holy Spirit says, but you must be willing to step off of that path with me. So we can be caught up in the birth and death cycle with all of our beliefs and all of our attachments regarding the spiritual path. That is still not awakening. And that is what the Supreme Yoga is pointing out. I'll read this long quote again. Each individual sees only those objects which are rooted in his own mind. When the ideas in the mind do not bear fruits, there is a change in the mind. There follows a succession of births to suit these psychological changes. It is this psychological connection that creates the conviction in the reality of birth and death and in the reality of the body. When this conviction is given up, given up the idea I am the body or I am the mind or I am the perceiver, right? When this conviction is given up, there is the cessation of embodiment. So why don't we go ahead and look at the journal and see what I wrote after contemplating this quote. I see a few people have entered the room since I posted the link. So let me just give you the link one more time. This is the link to where we are in the journal. And this is what I wrote after contemplating this quote from the Supreme Yoga. Belief changes based on learning. Belief changes based on learning. As belief changes, world and body experience changes. However, world and body experience doesn't end until belief ends. To see clearly, let go of belief. It's very simple. I don't think I understood If I did, I don't remember, and I don't remember a lot of things. So sometimes I think I probably contradict myself in my teaching because my memory now is so poor, you know, that I can't really remember a lot of things. And so, I may say things that seem untrue, but they're just based on what I'm remembering today, which is not necessarily the same as what I might remember tomorrow. My mind, my memory changes. And as a result, I can only speak from the memory that I have right this moment. But the memory that I have right this moment is that I don't remember being clear on the fact that spiritual beliefs are also an error until I contemplated the seven steps. When I, for example, studied A Course in Miracles, and A Course in Miracles taught me things that were completely different than the way I thought before. And at first I questioned, those teachings. But then at some point I surrendered to those teachings. And I let go of my old beliefs. And I accepted new beliefs. And those new beliefs could be said to be a bridge. And that would be legitimate. But I don't think I understood that new beliefs need to be very, very temporary. That if we cling to new beliefs as if we have learned something real, we are making a mistake. And you know, it's funny because A Course in Miracles does point this out. If you look in the workbook at lesson 189, paragraph 7, A Course in Miracles is very clear about the fact that we need to let go of everything. We need to let go of all of our ideas about God. We need to let go of all of our ideas about who we are. We need to let go of all of our ideas about what is true and what is false. See how we accept beliefs about what is true and what is false? You know, we may accept beliefs that spirit is true and a belief that the world is false. But the Course tells us that we need to let go of all of our thoughts about what is true and what is false. Remember, it says, forget this Course, which means everything that we learned through the Course, all of the beliefs that we took on as a student of the Course need to be let go. NTI is also very clear on that. If you look at NTI 1 Corinthians, it talks about becoming the empty shell. And when it's teaching us how to become the empty shell, which means not holding on to anything, it asks us to even let go of everything Holy Spirit taught us. So it's not that I hadn't read these thoughts, or in the case of NTI, even written these thoughts before. I just don't think that it hit as a realization, as a true realization, that even spiritual beliefs are an error, and that all spiritual beliefs also need to be let go, until I was contemplating the seven steps. And of course, that is the point that is being made here in number 372. Again, it's very brief and very clear, so I'll just read it one more time and we'll move on. Belief changes based on learning. As belief changes, world and body experience changes. However, world and body experience doesn't end until belief ends. To see clearly, let go of belief. I said we would just read it one more time and then move on, but I was wrong. Because as I read it, something else came to my mind to say. Some of you may know that I'm also now reading a companion book to the Seven Steps along with it. And that companion book is The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. Both books are put together by the same person, Michael Langford. And although I'm only on chapter 5 in The Most Direct Means, this week I felt to go ahead and jump ahead to 14, which is the last chapter, and then go back to 5. So that's what I'm doing. And 14 is a very, very interesting chapter. But one of the things that Michael Langford talks about in chapter 14 is that, and again, A Course in Miracles says the same thing. Michael Langford just says it differently. Is that the mind will create or make whatever you expect. And so what Michael Langford said is if you take two different sets of people on the spiritual path and you tell one set of people to expect, you know, X, Y, and Z as progress, to expect to have these phases of progress on the spiritual path, and then you take the other group of people and you tell them to expect A, B, and C. He said the first group will experience X, Y, and Z, and the second group will experience A, B, and C. Because they believe, because they have been taught on the spiritual path that this is what they will experience, they believe they will experience, and the mind generates that experience. And, you know, he is very careful to emphasize that, you know, we need to be very aware of this mind ability to generate what appears to be progress based on our expectations, and that we need to be very careful, you know, to ignore everything until a true awakening is realized. So that's really what the Supreme Yoga is talking about here, and that's really what 372 is talking about as well. Our belief changes based on learning. And probably everyone that's hearing this, whether you're hearing it live now or whether you're hearing it on a recording, the reason you're hearing it is because you're on a spiritual path, which means you're learning stuff. You know, maybe you're learning about the chakras and how they're supposed to open and what that's supposed to look like. Or maybe you're learning something about kundalini. I've only heard the word. I don't know about it. But what that kundalini experience is supposed to look be like. Or maybe you're learning, you know, something else. But if we take these on as beliefs, that this is what I am supposed to experience, this is what I will experience, this is what all spiritual aspirants experience, then the mind can generate those experiences. And we can go through death and birth, and death and birth, and death and birth, and death and birth, and death and birth, from one spiritual path lifetime to another spiritual path lifetime, continuing within the illusion because we are attached to now spiritual beliefs. We're not the empty shell, as NTI 1 Corinthians would say, or we haven't let go of everything the way A Course in Miracles Lesson 189 Paragraph 7 asks. So we need to be real careful about going into this believing about spirituality. So again, number 372, belief changes based on learning. As belief changes, world and body experience changes. However, world and body experience doesn't end until belief ends. To see clearly, let go of belief. All right, so now if you are in number 372 with me, you can scroll down below the comment and reply area and click on number 373. For those of you who are in the room, I will give you 373. There you are. I I'm now going to read quote 373 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. And it says, "The notions of I and the world are but shadows, not truth." Again, the quote is simply, "The notions of I and the world are but shadows, not truth." All right, let's look at number 373 in the journal. "The idea of person, self, body, and world dies, and their experience disappears when the light of true knowing dawns." I'm looking at what I want to say, and I'm trying to figure out the best way to say it. Like, okay, how do you put this into words? Let's see. We'll see how it comes out, I guess. I have accepted that as long as I perceive a self or a world, I am not awakened. It's interesting because A Course in Miracles talks about the real world. And the real world is the world that forgiven eyes see. But one thing that A Course in Miracles is very clear about is the real world is also an illusion. One thing that's been very interesting for me since studying and contemplating the seven steps are the Nisargadatta quotes, especially. I don't think I'm the only one that feels that way. It seems like I've heard other people say that as well. And the interesting thing about Nisargadatta is that he almost always, when he is speaking and he's using the word I, he is speaking from the position of the absolute. It reminds me of something that Muji said once. Muji, when talking about the word I, said, "The devil says I, and God says I. What do you mean when you say I?" So as long as there is language, the speaker uses the word I. And Nisargadatta, when speaking, uses the word I and me and my. But if you pay close attention to Nisargadatta, he almost always speaks from the position of the absolute, or what we might call God. And so he says things like, "I do not experience a world." You know, and I remember one particular quote where there's a man kind of arguing with him. And the man says something like, "But I see you sitting there smoking a cigarette." And we all know that anybody who knows Nisargadatta knows he was a little different than many of the Indian gurus because he ate meat and smoked cigarettes. And so this person is saying, "But I see you sitting there smoking a cigarette." And Nisargadatta says, "That is your belief in the body." And he also could have said, "That is your belief in the world that sees that." I've read enough of these quotes from Nisargadatta and others that I have accepted that what I see in the world is seen through my current state of mind, my mind. You know, one idea maybe that that's a good symbol is like if I was laying in bed dreaming. And if, you know, Jasmine came into my room and said, "Mama, it's time to get up now. Mama, it's time to get up now." But in my dream, for some reason, you know, I'm dreaming that I'm waking up, but I'm so tired I'm not waking up. You guys have had those dreams, right? So I'm dreaming that I open my eyes and I see her saying, "Mama, it's time to get up now. Mama, it's time to get up now." And I dream that I get up. And I dream that I go and I put on my robe and I start, you know, making her breakfast. But actually, I'm still dreaming. You see, the voice that said, "Mama, it's time to get up now," came from outside the dream. But I, inside the dream, put a body on it and saw it in the dream. I can't say I know exactly what is happening when, you know, Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta, Michael Langford, when these ones speak, appearing to be very much in the world, appearing to, you know, Ramana appearing to have preferences about how things are cooked in the kitchen, Nisargadatta appearing to smoke cigarettes and eat meat, Michael Langford appearing to publish books and sell them on Amazon and ship them to people directly when they're ordered. I can't explain how it is that they do not see a world and yet I see them in a world being active. But I have accepted that to be the case. What this means is that I have accepted that awakening, what we call awakening, is something that is so extreme from our present experience that we can't even begin to imagine it. Therefore, trying to imagine it is a waste of time. And you know, NTI said this. NTI Luke said a couple of things like this. One thing that NTI said was something along the lines that anything that we expected awakening to be, you know, came from our limited imagination, and that awakening was something we did not expect. Another thing that NTI said, and I remember when this line came, I remember realizing, I don't know what this means, but when I know what it means, you know, that will be something. It said, NTI says something about, "You do not know the truth until you are the truth." And I'm okay with awakening being something so extreme. So by extreme, I mean different, unimaginable, that I can't even fathom it, and I'm okay with giving up on trying to fathom it. So 373 says, "The idea of person, self, body, and world dies, and their experience disappears when the light of true knowing dawns." One thing that Michael Langford wrote in chapter 14 of The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss is, he talks about how the ego always distorts the teaching. Always. That pure teachings come from true seers. But then ego, within a short number of years, always distorts the teaching. So that it's very hard to come by a pure teaching, unless the teaching, I guess you could say, is very fresh. Immediately the ego starts distorting the teaching. And he talked about one example is that there are teachings that say that when you awaken, the world disappears. He called that a true teaching. And he said, however, most of these teachings are very quickly distorted into also saying, and then once it disappears, it comes back again. You just see it differently. And he said, that's just a distortion that serves the ego's purposes of keeping you attached to being a seer in a world, not letting go, not realizing truth. You know, A Course in Miracles distinguishes between the real world and heaven. And it tells us that we will not be, I can't remember the word, but we will not be pulled into heaven before we are ready, right? And the real world is a bridge that helps to prepare us for heaven, because the reflection of heaven is so clear that our fear of heaven dies. But heaven would be that awakening that is where there is no more world. In fact, A Course in Miracles lesson 132 is very clear that the world does not exist. It never has existed. The body does not exist. It never has existed. Joe Goldsmith calls them a hallucination. Last week, I led whoever was listening through a daydream. I gave you all a little something to play with in your head, and I had you daydream, and I had you, you know, create a scene and create other people in the scene and imagine, you know, some kind of a conflict or something going on and imagining what your part was in it. You know, were you the hero? Were you the villain? What were you saying? What were you doing? And then I said, okay, now stop. Wake up. Where did it go? Even to say it disappeared is incorrect, because it actually never existed. Only the thought of it disappeared. So it's not that the world really disappears, it's that the world never existed. It's not that the body disappears, it's that the body never existed, and this is seen to be true. Another example that came through the Seven Steps journal was if you think you hear a noise in the bedroom lights off, you know, you're in the other room, but you think you hear a noise and you think there's a burglar that's gotten into your bedroom. And you go into the bedroom and you turn on the light quickly, and there's nothing there. It's not that the burglar disappeared, it's that the burglar was never there in the first place. Maybe a window was open or something. Something happened, a little bit of noise happened. But there never was a burglar there. The burglar did not disappear when you turn the light off. It is seen that the burglar never existed. So when the light is turned on, in this case, the light of true seeing, the light of true realization, there is no person self from the perspective of the seer. There's no body, there's no world. But the non-seer, or we could say the one who is still deluded, may see a body. And say, what do you mean you are not a body? I see you sitting there smoking cigarettes. So the question is all about, what do I see? If I see you sitting there smoking cigarettes, that means I am still deluded. That's what that means. The idea of person, self, body, and world dies, and their experience disappears when the light of true knowing dawns. All right, we can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 374. Nothing like a bit of clarity. All right, number 374 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening says, he sees the truth who sees the body as a product of deluded understanding and as the fountain source of misfortune, and who knows that the body is not the self. And again, these quotes originally come from another book called The Supreme Yoga. He sees the truth who sees the body as a product of deluded understanding and as the fountain source of misfortune, and who knows that the body is not the self. All right, so 374 in the journal, this is what I wrote after contemplating that quote. The body is a representation of a misunderstanding about what I am. To experience the body and call it me is to define a portion of total experience as having core importance. When a portion of total experience has core importance, the duality of good and bad is perceived, pleasure and suffering are experienced. One who knows his self does not see the body as having core importance. The total experience is seen as one mirage without separate parts. So it's interesting because the quote from the Supreme Yoga talked about the one who sees the body as a product of deluded understanding is one who sees truth. But he also mentioned that the one who sees truth also realizes that the delusion of the body is a misfortune. It's unfortunate to have that delusion. So we have to ask, why is it unfortunate to have that delusion? What is unfortunate about believing that I am a body? Well, there's some obvious answers, like if I believe that I am a body, I believe I can get sick and die. But many of us could experience, an entire lifetime, 75 years maybe, before a real sickness hits, more than like a cold or something. Does that mean that our belief that I'm a body did not result in misfortune until we were 75? No, the misfortune of believing we're a body is there always. If you think back to your earliest, I'll say bad memory, whether you probably at some point, maybe you were a preschooler or maybe you were just starting school. Whatever that bad memory is, whatever it is, that experience, that suffering, that embarrassment, that humiliation, that pain could not have occurred if you did not believe I am a body. Every seeming rejection, every seeming abandonment, every seeming accusation, every seeming loss of friendship, every seeming everything could not have been perceived if there was not the belief in this is me and that is you. The belief that this is me and that I am of core importance. Even if we lie to ourselves, and it's not a conscious lie, so it's one of these unconscious denied lies, even if we lie to ourselves and say we care about other people very much, I'm always doing for others, I'm always doing for others, I care about others, I put others before myself. If we pay careful attention, we'll notice that every time we are disappointed, angry, hurt, you know, rejected, humiliated, embarrassed, afraid. It's because the truth is, I, or me, this body, this person, has core importance. If I drop a fork in a fancy restaurant and it makes a loud noise and I'm embarrassed, that's because I think I have core importance, and now I'm wondering what everybody else is thinking about me. I remember one person I read who had an awakening experience and then, you know, began to see the ego much differently after this awakening experience. Still had an ego, but saw the ego differently. Said that she was amazed at how selfish the ego was. I mean, certainly there are certain things that we all call selfish, but she said everything about the ego is selfish. She said when you're, you know, she gave the example of when you're driving towards a stoplight, you hope it stays green long enough for you to get through it. Self-centered. The belief that I am this person. I've laughed before. I don't remember any of the specifics, but I've laughed before, you know, when there was a change in my life, and I was telling someone about the change in my life, and their first comment was about, how is that going to affect me? It happens all the time. You know, a change in my life, and the first thing my friends were talking about, are thinking about, is how the change in my life is going to affect them, what that's going to mean for them. That's the ego. That's self-centered. The body is a representation of a misunderstanding about what I am. The body is a representation, it represents a misunderstanding about what I am. To experience the body and call it me is to define a portion of total experience as having core importance. This reminds me of another conversation that we had here in the house a few times while Rose Marie was here. Now, this is very, very common, what I'm about to share, among course students anyway. We learn that the world is a projection of our mind. In fact, even now, that's what these quotes from the Seven Steps to Awakening, although they're not using that word, they're saying the exact same thing, because they're saying you see what you believe, right? And as long as you believe it, you see it. So the world is a projection of our mind. We learn this. But the problem is that when we learn it, we still think, I am this person, this body. And so we think that the world is a projection of this person's mind. Sometimes the way course students especially put such core importance on my mind and my projection, it makes me, the person, responsible for your misbehavior. And if I can just heal my mind enough, you will behave differently because you are just a projection of my mind. This is the way a lot of course students understand. Maybe even your cancer is the projection of my mind, and I, you know, you're my spouse or my child, and I do not want you to have cancer. So if I can find what in my mind is causing your cancer and heal my mind, your cancer will go away. It sounds nice, but it's not true. And the reason it's not true is that what we are overlooking is that the one we are calling me, or the one we are calling I, is not real. It's also a part of the projection. But we think that I am of such core importance that I, as this person mind, can project this entire world. The person mind is a part of the projection. The way I always explain it to Rose Marie is, if you think of the world as a movie, I am a part of the movie also. The movie does not come from me. I'm a character in the movie. We are so self-centered that we think we made the world. The body is a representation of a misunderstanding about what I am. To experience the body and call it me is to define a portion of total experience as having core importance. I am so important. My mind is the cause of your behavior. When a portion of total experience has core importance, the duality of good and bad is perceived, pleasure and suffering are experienced, and that's because everything is seen from my point of view. Your behavior, what's important about your behavior, how it affects me. Your cancer, what's really important about your cancer, how it affects me, how I feel about it. Everything about everything has to do with me. One who knows his self does not see the body as having core importance. Because again, remember, the body is just a character in the movie. And the entire movie is just a movie. The Regina character is no more central or no more important than the Kevin character, right? Or the Larry character, or the Barb character, or the Clara character, or the Lisa character, or the Deb character, right? The Lynn character, the Cliff character. They're all equally illusory, and none of them are what I am. One who knows his self does not see the body as having core importance. The total experience is seen as one mirage without separate parts. You see how self-centered we are? I mean, we even hear Course students say, you know, the Course students will have ideas like, I'm the only thing that's real and everything else is not real. Right? Everything out there is me, but the me that's still there is me, the person. We haven't actually transcended to the true self. So I'm seeing this me as real and you all as projection. You all are me, Regina. That's still coming from that self-centered mind. The awakened mind sees the entire illusion, including the Regina body, as equally illusory and none of them having core importance. One thing that's really helpful about this, at least to me, is that we see just how screwed up we are. And I think we have to see just how screwed up we are before we really fully surrender and let go of our thinking. If I have surrendered my prior worldly beliefs and I've adopted now spiritual beliefs and I think my spiritual beliefs are correct, I'm still making the same error. But if I can really start to notice how self-centered I am, not with judgment, this is one thing that's really important, I think, about the teachings of A Course in Miracles and the teachings of NTI. I think that if we really, to some degree, master, if you'll forgive the word master, I know some people have a prejudice against that, but if we can master the teachings of A Course in Miracles and master NTI, what we really can begin to do is be honest about how screwed up we are without judging it and without feeling guilty about it. It allows us to truly look at how fucked up the mind is. And then we begin to disengage from it. We don't disengage from it as long as we still value it, as long as we still believe we're right, as long as we still believe our perspective is right. We have to see how fucked up we are. And even on this spiritual path with these spiritual beliefs, we're as wrong as we were when we started. We're as wrong as we were as when we started. It's just a different kind of wrong. And this is what we need to see. This is the beginning of freedom. Because this is what's going to get us to what is described in A Course in Miracles 189, paragraph 7, is just letting the whole thing go. This is how we're going to become the empty shell that's in NTI 1 Corinthians. We got to let the whole thing go. Yeah, people are commenting on the fact that I use the F word, which, if you know Regina, she does not use that word. But the emphasis felt appropriate in this case. Because I think, but then I'm self-centered and looking from my own perspective, but I think that we're, most of us are still pretty far from realizing how fucked up we are. I think that, you know, we've let go of some beliefs and we've taken on some new beliefs and now we think we're right about them. And we're still as self-centered as we ever were. Ego has changed. It's become a spiritual ego, but ego has not been let go. So the body is a representation of a misunderstanding about what I am. To experience the body and call it me is to define a portion of total experience as having core importance. When a portion of total experience has core importance, the duality of good and bad is perceived, pleasure and suffering are experienced. One who knows his self does not see the body as having core importance. The total experience is seen as one mirage. Again, there's not one in the story that's more important than the others. One whose experience is more central than the others, right? That's ego. But the total experience is seen as one mirage without separate parts. All right, let's scroll on down and click on number 375. Number 375 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, says, he sees the truth who is not deluded into thinking that he is the body, which is subject to illness, fear, agitation, old age, and death. He sees the truth who is not deluded into thinking that he is the body, which is subject to illness, fear, agitation, old age, and death. Let's look at number 375 in the journal. Wisdom knows the body is not the self. wisdom is not affected by changes in the body's apparent condition or circumstance. Wisdom is constant, as is its self. And here the word wisdom, if we were going to put it into A Course in Miracles language, would be called the Holy Spirit or the right mind. Wisdom knows the body is not the self. Wisdom is not affected by changes in the body's apparent condition or circumstance. Wisdom is constant as itself. So again, we get ideas that if the mind is healed, the body is also healed. And we put importance on that. But have we ever stopped to ask why that's important to us? If I know I'm not the body, truly, not intellectually, but truly know that I am not the body, then what is it to me whether the body has the appearance of health or illness? Is health really better than illness? My health is guaranteed and never threatened because I am not the body. The body's health is meaningless. And in fact, especially if I am egoless, which means not self-centered, because the ego and self-centered, we'll say, are synonymous. If I am egoless and the Regina body is, you know, no different than the Joan body, the Larry body, the Ellen body, the Dory body, right? No different to me. Then how important is the Regina body to me? I mean, is it of core importance, her weight, her measurements, her aging, her health? That could only be true if self-centeredness is present or if ego is present. If there is no self-centeredness, if there is no idea that I am that body, then there also cannot be any concern about that appearance. Imagine yourself again sitting in the audience watching a movie. What concern is it to you? True concern. I know that sometimes we get caught up in our movies, but true concern. What concern is it to you of the bodies in that film? And which one has cancer, and which one gets married, and which one has children, and which one goes to college? You know, it's all just a part of a story. But there's no special concern to you about what happens to one character over another character because you don't have self-centeredness. Unless the character has been so much emphasized and you've projected your self-centeredness onto the character. And if so, that's still only temporary while you're watching the movie. Eventually you get up and walk away from the movie and are no longer concerned. Without self-centeredness or without ego, there can be no concern about the body, no specialness about my body, no idea of my body. Wisdom knows the body is not the self. Wisdom is not affected by changes in the body's apparent condition or circumstance. Wisdom is constant as itself. And that's it for tonight. I'll be back tomorrow at 1:30 Eastern Time, and we'll move on to quote number 376. Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with me for an hour. Bye.